Hey everybody, welcome to the A&N After Show. That's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett in a topical appropriate shirt. I think that's a Godzilla cat.
Yeah. There. Look at that.
I love him. That's a cute tabby.
It was a birthday present from my wife, who knows what I'm about.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about Godzilla here this week, along with Hayao Miyazaki. Basically, the results of the Oscars are in. And we've also got some big news, some sad farewells in there as well. Most of you have probably heard that the creator of Dragon Ball, manga creator Akira Toriyama, passed away on March 1st, although the news just came out within the last few days. So we're going to be sharing some memories that we have about how he affected both of our fandoms, since his work was kind of front and center when we were growing up. And then we're going to talk about Solo Leveling, which had a fight this week.
Yep.
There was a fight this week. Some stuff happened. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, our Dungeon Meshi Delicious in Dungeon segment is here. So James and I will be weighing in on the new food from Thursday's episode and whether we would eat it or not. Right off the top, though, I am recovering from a cold. So if I sound a little different, that's why. My throat hurts. I'm drinking kombucha. I may pass the mic to James to take over at any point if it starts to feel like it's getting too icky in there. I also went and got my COVID,
take care of yourself.
My COVID booster today, because I'm going to be traveling in a week, and got a bunch of blood work done. So, you know, I've got stuff going on here, and I've got stuff going on here, and I've got stuff going on here. I'm a fucking mess, guys. So, you know, bear with me while we get through this week's episode. So, right off the top, the Oscars happened over the week. It was on Sunday. And probably, I don't know, James, were you surprised that Hayao Miyazaki's Boy and the Heron won Best Animated Feature?
Not surprised is not the right word. Uh-huh. I could have seen it maybe going to Spider-Verse, just because of how big that movie and that franchise has become.
Right.
And I know that, at least with like the general public, you know, the Boy and the Heron wasn't the runaway like kind of success that Spirited Away was back in the
right
day.
We had talked on this podcast right after it came out. You know, I think I still feel that it is sort of more of a critics film, especially people who are very familiar with Ghibli are probably going to get more out of that experience than someone who just went to go see like a magical adventure story. But that being said, it did. I thought Nimona might get it. I thought there was some possibility there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really tight race. I mean, other than Elemental, which granted I haven't seen, but everything I've heard about it that one is the only one that felt just like there was no other like pick and they had to fill up a slot. And you know, Pixar put out a movie, so we might as well. And no one's putting Wish in there. So
Yeah. They didn't get in there, right?
But all the, you know, great competition, I would say, all around. But, I mean, Miyazaki's last movie and the fact that I think, like you said, it is an artsier, more highfalutin, critic-y kind of film as far as the approach. I wasn't surprised. I was happy. I think, you know, the fact that one of the greatest living animators probably in the history of the medium has only won two best animated feature Oscars, I feel like that feels a little low. So
yeah,
the fact that he got a second one, I think, is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I far and away, it was probably one of the better looking animated films, and it certainly had a lot to say. There's nothing else like it on the docket, and there's, you know, I haven't seen anything animated quite like that in a while. So I have to give it kudos to that. For those who are wondering or who watched the show, you may have noticed that Hayao Miyazaki and Toshio Suzuki were not there. I wasn't surprised that Miyazaki wasn't there, but there's been a couple of rumors floating around. Well, actually, neither of these are rumors, so to speak. There have been two recently since the award was given out. Two different people involved with Ghibli have come forward about Miyazaki. The Ghibli representative that was at the award ceremony said that neither of them were there due to their age, which makes sense. Like, the flight from Japan to Los Angeles is long. And again, Miyazaki is, you know, in his 80s at this point. I do not blame the man for not wanting to deal with, you know, the time change and the long flight and going, you know, through customs and all that other kind of stuff. But another, Toshio Suzuki then gave an interview, and I always take Toshio Suzuki stuff.
Yeah.
Don't cling on to this too much. Okay. That guy is like, he's a fox. Okay. He's a little bit wily. He knows how to do PR. He knows how to get people talking. Okay. But according to him,
and I think he likes to mess with Miyazaki too. Truly. Like I think he likes to mess with Miyazaki.
Yeah. They've known each other for decades and decades at this point. And Suzuki has always been the one who's a little more like seemingly forthcoming about how the studio operates or giving interviews or, you know, writing books about the work environment within Ghibli, those sorts of things. So that being said, Suzuki said that Miyazaki said that he is not appearing in public right now because he is embarrassed about the press conference he held where he said he was going to retire and then, you know, made a movie afterwards. And so that could also be part of it.
He's done that like four times at this point. I don't get. I mean, yeah, maybe, right? Maybe, right? Maybe he feels bad that like so much of the press about this film was that it's his final work.
Yeah, and he's still planning to work on something else now too, and it's been his final
work. Maybe he
work.
Just has one of his buddies that's given him crap for pulling the same old stunt like four times in a row.
Yeah. My personal conspiracy theory is that the reason Miyazaki is not appearing in public right now is because he shaved his beard and it was not a good decision. Have y'all seen
him? That's too relatable. I have been there. I know that pain. You can't take a risk. Once you have a beard and it's a part of your image, you can't take any risks. You really can't.
You forget what your chin looks like under there, right? And then once you see it again, it's kind of...
It looks bad. It's always bad. It never looks good. There's a reason that you have the beard.
Right.
Truly there is.
I mean, I can, my husband has a beard, and during COVID he's RN. And so they, you know, were wearing masks throughout the clinic, and they were having them wear ones where they told them they needed to shave their facial hair so that it would adhere close, you know, better to their face. And he did it. And it was actually kind of a problem. Like we were both sort of like, you gotta just grow that back, babe. That's just... And he did, and it didn't end up really being an issue after that. But it's like,
no, I the first time I ever met my wife's family, I screwed up shaving, and I can't do just a mustache. Very few people can these days, and I definitely can't. And so the whole thing had to go. And I answered the door, and my wife, the look on her face when she saw,
what have you done?
Her response is, why did you do that? And I said, I'm sorry. And then not too long ago, I guess 4 years ago now, because it's been 4 years since COVID somehow.
Yeah.
Not since COVID is still around, but you know what I mean?
Since the outbreak.
The pandemic was when I grew my hair out. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, my facial hair was just the mustache and the goatee. I didn't have all the side stuff. And I let it grow out when I was growing out my hair. And eventually when my hair finished growing out, when I was going back to work to teach, I shaved it back to just the goatee and the mustache, like I'd worn it for forever.
Yeah.
And there's something about just the change in hairstyle, where even my wife was like, oh no, it doesn't work anymore. You need the whole thing. I know. I thought so too. And I'm like, this looks wrong now. It just looks strange. So
the
beard is a fickle beast.
Yeah. Yeah. Without getting too much into it, I mean, my husband's gone through a couple different facial hair attempts. He really wanted the mustache that connects to, like, nothing on the chin, just a mustache that goes down and up.
The old Civil War general look.
He can't do it, so he had to give up on that. Like, it didn't grow... Anyway, I feel like I'm putting my husband's facial hair on blast. I'm sorry.
Hey, I get it. I have this little patch right here that never filled in. There's nothing I can do about it. Just look stupid when I try to do anything else. So I've just had to live with it.
No follicles there. Can't do anything about it. But yeah, so I mean, congratulations to the Ghibli team. It'll be interesting to see after this where they go forward since the recent acquisition by, was it Nippon TV, I think?
I think so.
Yeah. you know, maybe this will put another feather in their cap for their any future projects. Mm-hmm. You know, if they manage to like wrangle in some new directors or something to actually make anything.
Although, can I just say, before we move on from Boy and the Heron, the one area in which Boy and the Heron and Spider-Verse, I would argue, but I think Boy and the Heron even more, were both robbed. The Academy needs to stop quarantining animated films to just the one Oscar.
Yes, I think that's where you're going with this. Yeah.
And Boy and the Heron and Spider-Verse both probably equally deserved at least a nomination for Best Score.
Yeah,
I would argue Boy and the Heron probably deserves the win because I've been listening to that soundtrack, ever really since the movie came. It's the best thing I think Joe Hisaishi she's ever done.
Yeah, but I think Joe Hisaishi might have like an honorary Oscar. I don't know that he's won one specifically for a film score, but he should. It's just
he's produced like at least three or four of the best soundtracks of all time.
Yeah.
So like at that point,
yeah,
just give him a real Oscar, you dorks.
Yeah.
Like, don't just like, you know. This is your last chance, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, he might continue making scores for, like, because he does stuff outside of Ghibli as well, but other, like, live-action films and things like that. The other group that took home the Oscar was Godzilla. Minus One, their special effects team, took home the Oscar, and I think that was really well-deserved. Best Godzilla's looked in a while. Most boopable snoot I've ever seen on him. Great, just, like, the very short clip they showed during the ceremony of how, like, what they started with and how it, got melded in, and it was Godzilla, and then it was, like, a building he was destroying or what have you. It just looked amazing. And it was, there were parts that I guess, like, I should have known that that was computer effects, but when you're watching the movie, it doesn't look like it at all. So I was really happy.
And it really just goes to show that when it comes to producing decent looking CG effects in a movie, you don't need $100 million. Mm-hmm. You don't need to crunch, 350 CG artists for, 2 years straight. You just need to give them time, mm-hmm. and you need to have someone with vision and not do all of this pre-viz, pre-production CG stuff where you don't even have a script because you're just too busy building random mindless spectacle.
Yeah,
and not actually letting the director shape the content and the flow and the mood of the piece, because and granted, it helps that the VFX team was being led by the film director.
That's, yeah, which is a unique situation, right?
Yeah. But still, again, they did it on $15 million.
Yeah.
And according to the crew, like minimal crunch, no weekend hours, no overnight like overtime. It was like a, they all seem happy and healthy.
Yeah. So
it doesn't have to be this way, guys.
And they had the best shoes on the red carpet.
Oh my God. I would do horrible, horrible things for those shoes, Lindsay. I would commit crimes, white collar crimes.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, those shoes are probably the single dopest shoes I've ever seen.
They're amazing. So for those of you who haven't seen it, I unfortunately don't have a picture to pull up right now, but the crew has been wearing at all the red carpet appearances these shoes that have like Godzilla's hand as the heel, and these have been on like on loafers, on the men's dress shoes and on like the women's dress shoes. And they're looked up the shoemaker, because they make other shoes, and they have these amazing loafers that have like iridescent crystal on the
I saw those,
and I want them real bad, but they're about $800. And
I saw the number of digits after before the yen sign, and I went, oh no,
yeah,
the exchange rate's not going to help with that one.
Yeah, it's like no. I mean, could I theoretically do this? Why would I though? It's like just one of those things where I'm not on enough red carpets to justify spending $800.
Well, then it becomes motivation, where once you have the shoes, you're like, well, now I have to get on the red carpets because I've already invested.
I've already invested this much. I got to get myself invited to Grammys, Oscars, Kids' Choice Awards, all of those, just so that
VMAs, are they still a thing?
VMAs, I think so, right? Yeah. MTV Movie Awards, MTV VMAs, yeah. Just get me on all of those. Razzies, yeah. One of the things that I did want to point out, and we were talking about this a little bit off camera, was I'm unclear why they didn't provide them with a translator for their acceptance speech.
Yeah, I don't know.
We were hypothesizing that maybe, you know, they just thought it was a long shot that they would win, and so that didn't happen. But I would have liked to have seen that. They provided one for the Parasite director when he took Best Picture. And it just would have been, because it got played off, which I felt was horrible, because these are people, yeah, you know,
what is this? The Video Game Awards or something? Come on, Academy.
Yeah.
A little class.
Yeah, right. Right. You've got like five people up there who obviously drafted it out in English on a piece of paper. You know, it's not their first language. They're trying to read it verbatim and, you know, struggling, which in front of a huge audience of like movie stars and big producers and all these other sorts of things. And they're trying to honor, you know, the composer that passed away. And yeah, anyway, it seems like it always happens to somebody at these things.
A Japanese friend once, friend is maybe a bit of a stretch. We spend a lot of time together because we helped out with exchange students when we were in college. And so we would, you know, take them places and go to lunch and give them opportunities to practice their English. And I do remember at one point they kind of talked about how, because we would offer to like, hey, like, you don't have to feel like, we can order, like, you don't have to feel like put on the spot or anything.
Yeah.
And they talked about how it was kind of a point of pride where, like, you know, they're in a foreign country, they've been practicing really hard. And of course, yeah, with their friends and their family, it's a lot harder to gauge like how good you are at English. Like, mm-hmm, you know, to a lot of people, they probably feel like they're really, really good. And then when they're actually, you know, in the culture in another country, they're not as, I don't know if skilled sounds rude, but you know what I mean? Like, they don't have, yeah, as much of the linguistic.
Well, it's also hard to judge how, like, even if you feel really comfortable with what you're about to say, you never know whether who's listening is going to like adjust for your accent and things like that. Like, I've been in Japan and spoke what I thought was rudimentary but understandable Japanese, and then realized that like the RL thing is not how I hear it sort of situation, and it's a little like harder. Like, one example was when my husband and I were there, someone had left a wallet. Like, we found it while we were walking, and we're like, oh, let's be good Samaritans, and we're going to take the wallet to the little police box and turn it into the lost and found, because that's what we want someone to do for us. And then I had to spell out my last name, which is Loveridge, and it is not Japanese friendly.
That is just, yeah.
My entire name is, like, kind of ridiculous, because it becomes Rinji Rubberiji, and it's just, like, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, but I was happy to see the Godzilla team win. I hope this means that we might see more from them in the next like Godzilla Kaiju film. Like, I hope Toho was like, you know, backs them up on making the next one, because I thought this movie was just great. Did you see it in black and white? I didn't end up getting to see it.
I didn't get the chance to, unfortunately. Yeah. But I am holding out hope that 4K special edition comes out soon. I know that. I was reading that they had to pull it from theaters because of the contract they have with Legendary.
Oh, okay.
Because they're not allowed to release either. They can't release an American Godzilla movie and a Japanese Godzilla movie in the same calendar year.
Oh, wow. Okay, that makes sense. But now that you say that, but I hadn't thought of that.
Which is honestly kind of funny, because I feel like the fact that Minus One did so well and has such a positive reputation, I'm seeing more hype than I've seen up until now for Godzilla Kong.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a lot of people that maybe, you know, didn't take Godzilla seriously, or just, you know, didn't really think of Godzilla as being like a thing for them.
Yeah.
Really liked Minus One and went, actually, maybe I want to see the monkey punch the Godzilla. He's like, you're damn right you do. It's going to be the greatest film of all time. But I feel like the fact that people are kind of realizing the best thing about Godzilla, in my opinion, in that you're not stuck to just one kind of movie. You can have so many different kinds of Godzilla experiences.
Yeah,
and it's just made people more excited.
Yeah, because Minus One is very emotional film about like survivor's guilt and loss during wartime. And then, you know, we had Gareth Edwards' Godzilla was, you know, more critical of like the American military incompetence in the military industrial complex and stuff in America. And then you got the ones where it's just big monsters hitting each other really hard.
Yep. And they're all equally valid. People of the internet and angry Godzilla fans.
Yeah.
Godzilla doesn't just have to be a metaphor for the atomic bomb. That would be boring because it's been 70 years and you can't make, you know, 39 movies or whatever, where it's just every single time he's a metaphor for the atomic bomb.
Right.
It can be a lot of things. He's a big old giant monster that smashes buildings, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. You can just have him do Rampage World Tour style.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, see some craziness happen, let the animals out of the zoo, whatever.
I mean,
you know?
In Godzilla Singular Point, he's like a math problem or something. I still honestly don't know what that show is about. I reviewed that show and I genuinely, by the end of it, was like, I this is one of the first times I've ever been too dumb for, like, I genuinely don't know what's happening.
I think we have an interview with one of the, with some of the staff on that, and they talk about just how weirdly theoretical it gets or something. I can't speak
like,
to that.
Truly, it is. There are episodes where they info dump about like quantum physics for 20 straight minutes. And they're doing it in the most like baby talk, explain it like I'm 5 way. And I'm still sitting there like, I don't understand. I'm sorry. I don't understand. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I've reached my limit.
Like just put that one has a robot, right? That one has a giant robot in it.
Yeah. That has, that's like the first appearance of Jet Jaguar in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Except this time he's like a little robo buddy, like car. That show is so weird. It's not bad, but it's so weird.
Well, to move into something a little more serious, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, famed creator of Dragon Ball, Akira Toriyama, passed away on March 1st. He was 68. And for those who hadn't heard, it was due to an acute subdural hematoma. Now, I'm not a doctor, and this is not medical advice, but generally speaking, this involves like a brain bleed due to some sort of trauma to the head. No idea the exact circumstances that led to, you know, Toriyama's situation, but, you know, it doesn't seem like it was a recurring illness. There has been a couple things posted about some other health issues he may have had recently, but I haven't verified them yet. So I don't really feel like it's responsible to share those here until they're verified. But suffice to say, you know, he was an amazing talent and like a juggernaut in the anime and gaming industry. And we thought it would be, you know, kind of nice to share our experiences with his works, and how they got us into fandom. If you want more information about like more people sharing their experiences and their love for his work, if you go to Anime News Network, we have two roundups of folks, both within the anime industry and even politicians. The president of France tweeted about it, you know, and shared like art that he had. There was a statement put out by, I believe, the El Salvador government, basically acknowledging his passing and calling it a day of mourning for the people of El Salvador.
I mean, for those of you that don't know, you need to understand in Latin America, South America, Dragon Ball Z is like, it's next level. Like it is close to like a religion, like as far as the cultural impact that it has. Like it's one of those things where I bet you could stop any random person on the corner and they could be like 60 years old and they would know who Goku is.
Yeah.
Like it is, the saturation is next level.
I remember, I believe it was when the Broly movie came out, there were unofficial screenings set up in Mexico that got so many people coming out that Toei actually was like, okay, no, we'll like help you set this up. And got like legitimate screenings organized in Mexico, maybe other places in Latin America as well, just because the demand was so high.
I was under the impression that Toei sent them a cease and desist. And
I'm trying to remember if they did that first and then they were like, wait, sorry, actually we'll help. I can't remember the chain of events.
One of the two.
Yeah, I know in the end they did end up helping set up, but I don't know.
You're not going to stop them. Like they basically were like, we're doing this.
We're pirating Broly and we are watching it.
You sail a boat over here and come stop us because the people will riot if they don't get to see what happens between
these
two.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's huge worldwide. Pretty much every major athlete that I've had the opportunity to talk to, which surprisingly has been quite a few at this point, love this show. I mean, there's a lot of guys playing for the NFL, soccer, on like a national, like top tier level will tell you, you know, they're channeling Goku or Gohan or something like that, to get pumped up for their match. Like, you know, the series has become like inspirational for a lot of people for different reasons, including, you know, if you're doing anything like very physical on a professional level. So,
well, I think that's the craziest thing about hearing that he died.
Yeah.
Was that, and again, I think maybe for younger viewers, because Dragon Ball is still big. I mean, Dragon Ball FighterZ is huge. Mm-hmm. People still watch the show. I mean, I have students that still know Dragon Ball, but it's definitely, at least from my perception, I think it's almost reached the point where people have just kind of taken it for granted because it's such an integral part of, I mean, it's like Mickey Mouse or it's like something where it's like, yeah, Dragon Ball, like it's always been there. And it feels that way, even though like when you think about it, I mean, it's like, I mean, Dragon Ball was happening within our lifetimes was when it really got started and got big, even though it feels like it's been around since the dawn of time, right?
Right.
Like, it feels like it's always been there. And so to hear that Toriyama died, like it was, you know, I didn't cry necessarily. I didn't get like physically emotional, but it was almost this weird moment of like, oh my God, I didn't even think he could die. Like,
right.
It's Toriyama. Yeah. Like, I mean, he is anime in a lot of ways. Like, you don't have anime without Toriyama and Dragon Ball. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I feel like the closest equivalent would be Eiichiro Oda, which, I mean, I don't know how much space there is between their ages. I mean, their series, there's quite a bit of space between One Piece and Dragon Ball, but I don't know if there's like a big age gap between the two. But or Rumiko Takahashi. Those are like the couple where it's sort of like when that happens, it's going to mess people up. But Toriyama, it's because, I guess because it felt like it came out of nowhere. You know, there was no like, and I don't know that they necessarily would have said that he was recovering or anything if he had had a health problem, but it just sort of like dropped. It was late in the day when the news dropped. And I remember I was at my son's jazz concert. So this is going to be one of those things where I'm going to be always say, like, I know where I was when I found out Akira Toriyama died. I was at my son's jazz concert and it was intermission and I just checked my phone. And I had seen that the Dragon Ball account had shared something, but I'd seen like a quote retweet or something like that. And it didn't mention Akira Toriyama. And so at the time I thought that it was a voice actor, like, Masako Nozaka, who is the voice of Goku, and she's, you know, she's in her 80s. But I didn't really have time to look into it until the concert started back up. And then when I looked at it, I was like, oh my God, it was just very much like, holy crap. You know, and then it started sort of settling in, just what a huge loss it is, and how large his impact was. James, do you want to share, like, what was your first encounter with a Toriyama series?
God, I mean, it's to the point where I don't know if I could tell you, like, I don't think I have a memory of not knowing Dragon Ball, you know, like, I can remember my life before Dragon Ball, obviously, because it wasn't on TV in the States until, like, I think, what, 97?
Yeah.
That's when it first started airing, and I probably didn't really get into it until a little bit later, like late 90s, probably around the time I moved to Colorado. So around like 99, 2000, I was already very, you know, very into it.
Yeah.
All I know is that Dragon Ball was the first, I mean, I guess as a, like an anime critic and as someone that loves this industry and this medium so much, Dragon Ball was the first time I think I was consciously aware that I was becoming like an anime fan, that I liked anime. Because I mean, I watched Pokemon like literally every child on the planet did back in the day.
Yeah.
But we didn't think about Pokemon as anime. Like that never, like it felt completely like just any other cartoon you'd watch on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Even to this day, I've talked to some of my own students and some of them have expressed shock where it's like, oh, he doesn't like anime, he just likes Pokemon. And I'm like, no, Pokemon's anime. And they don't think of it that way. But Dragon Ball was 100% like, holy crap, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
I have never seen a show that has like an ongoing story where characters can die.
Yeah.
Where you have these villains that are like not just, you know, trying to screw up the main character's birthday party or like, you know, take over the world. They're like, no, they're trying to blow up the planet and do a big genocide. Like,
yeah. Like, and this is how they're going to do it too.
Yeah.
There's going to be like a chain reaction that you have to stop at some point. And we can see how the dominoes will fall. Yeah.
And like the funny little comedy relief character can get his chest exploded and like you see it happen. And as a kid, you know, like I'd seen, you know, R-rated movies and stuff, but, you know, cartoons were cartoons. And like that was, it was very much like, you know, if you want to see cool, like edgy, exciting, thrilling, you know, stories that like dig their hooks into you and you just keep wanting to follow them, you don't go to cartoons for that. You go to cartoons to laugh and to like, you know, waste some time on Saturday morning. Maybe check out what new Pokemon is on TV. But Dragon Ball was the show that honestly opened my eyes to the fact that there was this whole world of animation, which I've always loved. And I always kind of knew I had an affinity for it, but animation that could like actually tell stories and that could treat you, you know, and granted, I mean, I was a kid, so treating me like an adult really is treating you like you're 11 and not seven, but still like that, like it made me feel, it made me feel like I was onto something that no one else in the world knew about, which of course
it was like crazy, they had a cast of characters and they trusted you. You can keep track of all these guys. Like, we don't have to like water it down. And there's only three or four recurring characters. Like, you can have a wide cast and they can have these different interactions and histories with one another that continue to play into later events. Like, you understand Vegeta and Goku's rivalry because you've been watching since the beginning and before Vegeta turned, you know, to the good side, yada yada. So there were character dynamics that were more complicated than what we typically got, because like most of what I was watching otherwise at the time was kind of one and done stuff. I mean, it was still like entertaining or could even be well animated, but like, you know, I was watching stuff on Kids WB, like the Men in Black cartoon. Great cartoon, but don't
Godzilla.
Expect like, the Godzilla one, things like that. Animaniacs, those sorts of things. And it seemed like it was around the year, like it was like 1998, 99, 2000, because I know it was leading up to like my 13th birthday when this was on the air. You know, we always fell into like two camps, but this also seemed like, it's kind of funny, but like as someone in the Sailor Moon camp, I just knew that like if I knew enough about Dragon Ball Z, I could definitely talk to the cute anime guy, because that was the one that he was into and vice versa, right? Yeah. So it's like you could have that crossing of it. So like I watched, you know, I know who all the characters are, and I watched probably most of the Cell Saga when that was on. I've seen most of that and, you know, a handful of the stuff from the Frieza arc and everything. But a lot of that was because like guys I liked were into it. Now they didn't really do the same for Sailor Moon, but I was, you know,
I was gonna be
ahead of the game though.
It was their loss because it turns out, guys, Sailor Moon rips.
Yeah.
So if you haven't caught on to that yet somehow, Sailor Moon owns, but
Some
of us boys at the time were a little too set in our ways.
But I had friends that were, you know, girls too that were into Dragon Ball. And I shared this anecdote on Twitter when I heard that Toriyama passed away, but like I've shared some of Lindsay's Chuni stuff on here before. This is the same time period, okay? So
we need to make like one of those like indie webcomics where like it's like
Lindsay's Chuni bullshit from when she was 12. Yeah, it was a whole mood, okay? So the same group, something else that we did was we had a notebook, and this was like a pencil paper notebook, and we would pass it among each other and write in it because we were doing a text RP with Dragon Ball Z characters in it. Okay. So we had like our OCs and whatever convoluted backstories that we had made up that made them fit into the Dragon Ball Z world. It was mostly an excuse to like pair up with the fighter that we liked the most.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, surprise to no one that I was into Vegeta, because of course I was.
You could fix him.
I could fix him. I'm sure that he has a soft spot in there and it would be just for me and that would make me special, right?
I mean, literally that was Bulma's whole game and she won.
Yeah.
So like you weren't wrong. Like,
yeah. It's not like he was impossible, right? And And my friend at the time, I think I also shared in Lindsay's previous Chuny Corner that we all went by different names. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, my friend, she went by Kat, which was like some convoluted, female version of Kakarot. That's the whole reason she went by that, even though it seems like a seemingly normal name. And I had another friend who went by Lena, which was specifically after Lena Inverse from Slayers. Okay. So that was all of us. And then we had one girl who did not have a made up name. She just went by her regular old name. For, you know, whatever reason. So
she's like, guys, you have to understand there's only so far we can go.
Yeah. She was like, I'll throw out the Japanese catchphrases in the hallways, but you're not calling me a different name. I'm not doing that. But yeah, I mean, Dragon Ball was just, it was insular to the entire fandom. Everyone knew what Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z was. I used to get the floppies too, because mm-hmm. I had a comic box with subscriptions in it, and it was mostly all manga, but it was, I can't remember if they were unflipped yet at that point. They might have all been flipped. And I got Sailor Moon, and I also got Dragon Ball and like read stuff about, you know, Goku and the Red Ribbon Army and stuff like that. Just crazy stuff. And then Chrono Trigger was a big part of, we only played it on an emulator because we were poor children, but Chrono Trigger was a big part of the RPG fandom at the time. And
absolutely.
Dragon Quest, which people have already shared, like, any RPGs that you're playing now probably have some tiebacks to Dragon Quest, including Final Fantasy. So,
I mean, there probably would not be Final Fantasy if not for Dragon Quest.
Right.
Like, truly. They legitimately said, we're going to make that game, but better, you know, or different.
Yeah.
And make money, finally, after a bunch of failures and flops.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did. And thanks to that, we have the perfect masterpiece that is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, where...
Have you finished that game?
No, Lindsay.
I heard there's a lot of side quests, so...
It's so big. There's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much game. but I did finally get to the Gold Saucer, and it's truly everything I dreamed. And I wouldn't be able to make friends with a weird Scottish cat and a stupid-looking bird if it wasn't for Akira Toriyama drawing that little slime all those years ago and saying, hey, I'm just gonna, you know, cement an entire industry while I'm here just for fun. As a lark.
Gonna do RPGs, then I'm gonna do, you know, I'm gonna kind of reinvent Battleship. I can show that you can run a manga in Weekly Shonen Jump and the main character is a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like he did, like Dr. Slump, A+ character design, by the way, would not change anything about Ariel's character design, just like the cutest. That one's a little bit before my time and was not as widely available to watch. Mm-hmm. But someone put a tweet up, if you go look at what Weekly Shonen Jump looked like the week before Dr. Slump came out, and all the main characters on the front look exactly the same, just sort of like black hair boys and kind of similar drawing styles. I mean, there's a couple that stand out, and if you're familiar with the mangaka, you might recognize them. But
syndrome has been a thing for a long time. Isekai didn't invent it.
Yeah, I
like to dunk on them for perpetuating it, but it's been around forever.
Yeah, and then you got to imagine Ariel, who's this like very round, sort of super deformed look character, purple hair, just cute. Right there on the front, like with the rest of them. And she was very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Nick wants to know if you won the Queen's Blood tournament. James, did you win?
The one on the boat? Yes, I did. Queen's Blood has destroyed my life. That's part of the reason this game is taking so long. Because
there's a trading card game built into it?
Hell yes, and it is very fun, and I'm physically incapable of ignoring it.
do you have to buy booster packs and everything?
You do, but they're like really cheap. And I've managed to make a deck where I can win most of the games with a few different tweaks. But that game is so fun. And the conclusion of that Queen's Blood tournament, the story beat that comes is one of the most gloriously stupid things that Final Fantasy has ever done. And I'm so happy that the people in charge of this game understand that Final Fantasy is supposed to be campy and ridiculous and absurd and filled with tonal whiplash. I like Final Fantasy 16, don't get me wrong. But I just love it when the game is like one step away from just being Japanese Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
And that is what Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is. Okay. It feels like Tim Curry could bust open the door and sing Sweet Transvestite at like any moment. And it makes me so happy.
I'm going to turn to the comments for a minute. Crimson, it's funny because my son uses that moniker as well, but that's not him. Said that Shigeru Miyamoto was inspired by Toriyama with Ariel from Dr. Slump, and Miyamoto took the inspiration of how she ran in a tanuki suit used that for Mario in his tanuki suit. I remember seeing that online. I also saw someone said that the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog claimed that Sonic and Tails' dynamic is based on Gohan and Piccolo.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that a little bit.
Yeah, where I assume Sonic is Piccolo in that situation.
I mean, we kind of have to be, I guess.
Yeah.
For a second, I was thinking like Goku and Piccolo, and I was thinking like that original tournament arc, and I was like, that doesn't seem right. I don't think Sonic's ever tried to kill Tails.
No, no, that part, no. Not so much. I think it's just more of the banter or something. It's hard for me to imagine that because my Sonic, the personality associated with Sonic is very much a Saturday morning cartoon, which is not Piccolo. It's too smarmy
to be
Piccolo. So, yeah, I read him kind of smarmy. But if you guys have your own stories relating to Dr. Slump or Dragon Ball or Dragon Quest or any of the works that Akira Toriyama did, Blue Dragon was another one.
Underrated game.
Put it in the comments. We'd love to just see your memories. Maybe we can read some next week before I go to Japan. We'll probably have one more and then we'll take a week off after that. But with that, I guess we should maybe move into solo leveling.
Sure, stuff happened.
Yeah, James, you want to recap for us what happened in solo leveling this
week? Oh, God. Okay, so
short and sweet.
They went into the dungeon to fight a monster. We didn't actually see them fight the monster, which is kind of funny. So there were a bunch of criminal guys that were there, and they were there because I guess the government has like a running suicide squad program where they'll send criminals to like go do dungeons.
But if they survive, they can get early release.
Yeah. Again, it's literally just a suicide squad.
Yeah.
But these guys were like those comically like nonsensically evil monsters that just live to kill.
Yeah.
And it turns out that purple homie here, whose name I forget, he was the guy that was with the guy that gave, oh my God, I'm forgetting our main character's name.
Jinwoo,
thank you.
Yeah.
They gave Jinwoo his reassessment when he first got out of the dungeon.
Yeah.
And the purple guy's boss is like the dude who we've been kind of just randomly following around for the past few weeks as he does stuff. And turns out this guy's like a serial killer.
Basically like a serial killer, right? Like the whole idea that what happens in the dungeon stays in the dungeon is taken very literally throughout the series, and people are just sort of killing each other all the time in these dungeons. And there's
like that we're establishing that's not just like a one-off thing, but there's like a running culture of like hitman like activities going on where it's just understood that if you really want someone dead, you throw them into a dungeon and pay someone else some money to kill them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's just like a recurring thing. And what we've seen, because Jinwoo's done multiple dungeons where people died in them at this point, is that some suit shows up and they're like, so what happened? And then they can lie about whatever, who did the stabbing, what caused it. And there seems to be very little follow-up to make sure that any of it's true. And they're that makes sense based on your guys' rankings. You know, that would probably happen. And then that's it.
Who can be bothered? You know, there's stuff to do.
Yeah.
So the three serial killer guys basically get immediately murdered by Purple Guy.
Yeah.
And he also, just because he likes killing people, it turns out, he kills the other two dudes who were in the original party that went down into the dungeon and managed to escape when Jinwoo got killed or whatever happened to him. And so we have this kind of nice moment where this guy here, who was obviously going to die because half of the last episode was establishing that he has a nice, cute little family life and this like wife at home. And he's like basically the hunter equivalent of like 5 days from retirement. And his wife was like, honey, do you really have to go down there? We have such a good life. And the minute she said that, I'm like, oh, okay. So he's dying next
Like death flag.
Yeah. We'll see how death that happens. Flag.
Yep.
And he does kind of in an unceremonious way, to be honest. He just kind of gets killed to show that purple guy is real extra crazy. And he has that moment with Jinwoo where he's like, I'm sorry that I ditched you. And I guess Jinwoo has been really mad about that this whole time. And so he has like this like emotional moment where he's like, who am I supposed to blame if you're dead?
Even though we've not seen him like really think about this dude for the last couple episodes at all, it's just been about
his stats. Yeah.
Yeah, just stats stuff.
Whatever. I guess that's been like a character thing that he's been concerned with. And now that's, you know, now that's over with.
Yeah.
And then he fights the purple guy for a while and he kills the purple guy, obviously.
Yeah.
And then the other two, one-armed guy and healer girl. You can tell where I'm at with the show with the fact that I genuinely can't remember anyone's names. But they cover for him because, you know, he might be a borderline psychopathic bloodthirsty murderer, but he's their borderline psychopathic bloodthirsty murderer. And
That's about it. I thought that they handled his reveal of being a psychopathic like killing machine pretty well compared, you know, everything considered. I think they
it was kind of the typical like anime, you know, he goes into, I can't do it, but he does like the crazy guy pose.
Yeah.
Like, hunched over and his head is cocked and he's like grinning like a
booger.
And it's like, oh, okay, he's one of those. All right.
Yeah.
So yeah. It worked for like the vibe it was going for.
Yeah, the only like kudos I can give it is that they do seem to be setting up some sort of like, this is actually destroying his humanity or something, like, which I feel like that's been done before, but it's usually more lip service as far as like, he's not even a human anymore, he's a monster sort of thing, which is kind of done in this one, but it does seem like they plan to, like, well, it's like what you said in an earlier show, James, where what if the computer program or whatever is trying to turn him into the perfect killer?
Yeah.
And we actually got like sort of a visual to show that some emotion.
It seems like mechanically that is literally happening.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like his
losing his humanity stats or whatever.
Yeah. Something like that to gain all these other ones, which I don't know, unless he has some sort of revelation and decides to counteract that in some way. Again, not super interested in watching the main character become the most stoic, logical machine person who can calculate and counter every single attack because he has all these secret abilities that no one else has. And he's like cross. It's like he's got skills in multiple classes.
They're
you're in the assassin class, but you're also a berserker class, and you're
you're also a tank. So here, my experience of this episode was a real roller coaster because every now and then it would do something where I went, oh, okay, but then every now and then it would do something that would make me go, oh, okay. And it's like, for instance, right? On the one hand, I've been complaining that Jinwoo has had no one to talk to for the past 8 episodes, and that's been kind of boring. And this week, we actually had characters for him to talk to and bounce off
a little bit. Yeah,
even None though what's that face? Interesting.
Yeah,
but they're still there. I'll take it. She's kind of cute. Hila girl. Like, I'm glad that she got over her trauma enough to help out in the battle
a little bit. Yeah.
But then, like, the whole one of the things the show had done a good job of up to this point, despite leaning into the whole overpowered superhero dude thing, is that he was going up against monsters that were like so big and threatening that you could buy that even though he's been like power leveling, he's still has to try. Like he's still like the fact that he's become an OP power leveling, you know, Omega Lord badass is only allowed him to like just barely survive. And that to me is like, okay, if that's what you're going to do, you're at least maintaining the tension in the fights so that there's some drama there. But in this episode, Like, at no point did I ever think that Stabby McMurder Man was gonna
win.
Yeah. And yeah. not even like in a way, like, I didn't even think he posed that much of a threat.
Yeah.
Honestly, him going, oh my God, he's truly beyond understanding with his power. And it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then Lindsay, they did the thing that really just, I almost had to like pause and walk away for a second because I,
yeah,
so sad. They pulled out that damn Nietzsche quote.
Nietzsche quote.
The if you stare into the abyss, the abyss.
Oh, guys, oh.
It is 2024. You can't use that quote unironically if you don't want me to laugh at you. Because yeah. I'm sorry, y'all. Once it's become like the de facto symbol of every edgelord, you know, 11-year-old wannabe Death Note, like next Death Note writers, like practice manga. You don't get to use it anymore. I'm sorry. Like, it's done. It is done. It's in the past.
Also, this is a small, trifling little point, but I don't think they translated it completely accurately either. Like, they reference it, and it's obvious that's what he's saying, but they didn't actually directly pull the quote, and it bothered me. I was like, you know he's saying that quote, except in Japanese. Why is the English translation, like, not the exact... Anyway, trifling, small.
And well, that bothers me because it's like, wait a minute. And again, this is such a nitpicky thing, but it's the kind of thing where when a show is trying this hard to be cool and then actually being kind of lame, it makes you ask these questions where it's like, okay, does Serial McStabface, does he know that he's quoting Nietzsche? And is like, is he being written as the kind of dork that would, in his possibly final moments, throw some Nietzsche at the main guy just to really sell how badass he is? Or is this like a conclusion that he has come to organically within this Nietzsche-free universe, which makes the show seem like it really thinks it's being profound, when that is genuinely at this point in time one of the least profound things you could possibly do in a script? You know, it is basically the same thing as if you said, you know, we're not so different, you and I. Like, genuinely, it's that. It's just that. And it's like, guys, come on, we can't do this anymore. I'm sorry.
No, we can't. James, why do we always pick the show and then we don't like the show very much?
I don't know. Not always.
We were okay with Attack on Titan, right? We weren't this mean to Attack on Titan, were we?
No, Attack on Titan's one of the greatest anime ever made.
Okay.
And we also, we picked Akiba Maid War. And I want to say, we were on the right side of history, y'all. We knew.
We knew that one.
From day one that this is going to be legendary.
Yeah.
So I think really, it's been Solo Leveling. There was...
JJK Season 2.
Yeah, there's JJK Season 2. But apparently we're just the outliers on that one. We're the cranky weirdos.
Apparently,
Yeah. So... apparently we're just wrong, even though we're not.
Not wrong. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, Maiden Abyss 2 also a masterpiece.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean,
no one regrets watching that with me, I'm sure. No one ever has regretted watching Maiden Abyss with me.
They ate the babies. Oh my God. That one, I feel like I have mind holed some of the details of that specific season because it was just so much.
Genuinely. I'm shocked that show exists.
Yeah.
In a good way. I'm glad it exists.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it for Solo Leveling. I mean, next week he'll probably do some stuff with his rich friend, you know.
Yep.
And
maybe his sister will show up to exist.
Yeah, she didn't even make an appearance in this episode, did she? I don't think. Yeah. Her one, like, she gets like a couple lines every... Do you think she'll get kidnapped? She's kind of got kidnapped vibes, right?
I mean, she's going to get kidnapped, or I bet you this is the kind of show where if you're like creepy brother dude, the big buff brother guy, he's going to like, he's going to like tie her up and like threaten to, you know.
Is this the dude who's like, I'll get to it after my stockholder meeting? Is that who you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for something completely different, why don't we talk about food and also clothing from the latest episode of Delicious in Dungeon.
First, we need to expand this one to would you eat and or wear that?
Yes, exactly. So first off, first half of the screen here, would you eat tentacles gnocchi, tentacles pasta? So this is the tentacles from the previous, well, they actually encountered quite a lot of tentacles recently, including the ones from the previous episode. I still see no issue with eating the tentacles, and I think that gnocchi actually looks really good. I love gnocchi.
Oh, I'm a gnocchi fiend. I could eat gnocchi all day and night.
Yeah.
Honestly, this looks great.
Yeah.
As long as, and I'm assuming that these guys know what they're doing enough to separate the fishy tentacles from the whatever else. As long as the flavor profile is consistent and I'm not going to accidentally bite into like a cod flavored gnocchi and then whatever.
That also, looks great. Having eaten octopus, I do wonder if like the gnocchi will kind of have a rubbery, because I mean, octopus is really chewy. And if it was too chewy, that's not really the texture I want from gnocchi most of the time. But I would try it. I would definitely try it.
Yeah.
But would you wear a frog suit? This is a skinned giant frog sewn into a onesie to create a frog suit.
I laughed for like 5 straight minutes.
I didn't notice this when I watched it the first time, but Chilchucks.
He's a sausage. It's just
he's a sausage. 2, his is just the remnants of like the other guys'. Like they just took the piece, like leftover pieces from all the other frogs and sewed it together. So his is very patchwork. Looking. Little sausage man. Oh, why?
This show's so good, you guys.
Sensei's beard is also inside of it. I don't know why they don't just let it hang out. So it looks like he has this chest hair kind of coming out of his... Everyone looks so disappointed.
He looks like Bob Hoskins.
Oh my god.
Okay.
I would wear it.
This is great.
Yeah, yeah, I would wear it. And I'm assuming they
like... treated or what's the word for in leather? I'm assuming that like the insides are still all goopy, right? Yeah, yeah, like it's dried out, right? So
no, because doesn't it stick? Remember, doesn't it start sticking?
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean
that changes my answer a bit.
They were in an emergency scenario, so they couldn't dry it first. But I think theoretically, I mean,
if I had to wear it to get past the
tentacle,
the whatchamacallits,
I
wouldn't have a problem. That's fine. It's a frog. It's not like if it was like a mermaid or like again anything that wears pants, I would feel wrong. But the frogs are whatever. That's fine. But as far as like rocking the dungeon meshy drip, I don't really know. If it was sticking to me, I would probably have to give that a pass for like casual wear.
I was gonna say like, it does bother me in a disturbing way the more they look at it, the fact that like the eye holes are sewn up because they took the eyeballs out and they sewed the sockets shut on their heads. So they look like ears, but there used to be
It was adorable though when Laos was like, oh, I love how the eye holes make it look like we're wearing ears like that.
Yeah. And I do think Marcel's ears do add to the shape on the head in a way that is nice, like Laos points that out. But, you know, she's not thrilled. You're free to use this as your icon photo for any social media site. I feel like this is a perfect picture to become, like, your Discord server, like, user image. And then next we have cutlets to conquer the red dragon. And for some reason, like, I can't recall what meat they used for this one. Do you remember, James?
No, I don't. All I know is that it's basically tonkatsu, so I'm eating it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks good. And where do they keep getting these buns? These delicious looking like rolls. They look really good. Yeah, this one's easy. Some
pickled veggies over there too. Yeah, it looks delicious.
Yeah, it looks like it's sitting on top of a bed of like
shallots.
Shallots or red onion. Yeah. Looks really good. And that was actually all the food for this week, I think.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Because we only have one episode, not two.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed that episode of Delicious in Dungeon, though. We see some interesting plot is starting to develop in the series, too, regarding the crazy magician and how like the soul is bound to the dungeon, and that's why people can be revived if they die in there, which I thought was kind of interesting. So
how long do they have to rescue his sister again?
If the red dragon goes dormant, apparently, you know, they digest very, very, very slowly.
Okay. So there's a time limit, but not such that they actually have to be in any kind of rush.
That's kind of the vibe that I get. But every time I bring this up, people in the comments and stuff like allude to, you know, spoilers. So I don't know. I think there's going to be a reveal or something regarding that point in the near future.
Let me ask you, Lindsay, if you were eaten by a dragon.
Okay.
And subsequently revived, if we're assuming this mission goes okay, which I don't know. I think it will. This doesn't seem like the kind of show that's going to like become a big sad tragedy, but who knows?
Yeah.
But let's assume you get revived. Your friends eventually, you know, they either cut you out of the belly or they wait. Well, I guess they can't wait for the dragon to do its biz. So
yeah, I'm digested. So they got to cut me out. Yeah. And get my body out of there.
Do you think you like, would you be mad if you found out that your party took like any detours on the way to get you? Like, would you be upset if you found out they, like, screwed around with some orcs for, like, a couple days? Or...
Well, yeah.
No.
Especially my brother. Laos is her brother.
But if your brother is Laos.
Right. So, I mean, she's probably expecting this, right? Like, she's been tolerating his weirdness for a long time. I still have the picture of them in the frog suits up on my second screen. So every time I look over there, I see them and it's still really funny.
The little sausage suit is just a touch of genius.
It's so cute.
Do you think
carry him around in a backpack like that with just his head sticking out like people do with their like chihuahuas?
Do you think that you remember anything when you get revived?
Yeah, how does that work? Like, as far as the deterioration and everything, how that works, I'm not sure. I hope that I would at least remember being eaten.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing that would give you, like, PTSD nightmares forever, right?
Yeah, how long do you have to be digested before you lose consciousness?
Especially in that dungeon when you're constantly, like, wriggling through slimy things.
Yeah.
She's just going to constantly, like, feel like she's back in the maw of the dragon.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Jameson? Question to you though. Would you be mad?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Yeah. No, I'd be mad. Yeah. Not like mad enough to make a huge deal out of it, but the kind of mad where I would like jokingly give my brother crap for it for like the rest of his life.
Yeah.
To the point where he would know that I'm not really joking, but I'm also not mad enough to make our family business public.
Yeah, I feel like I would be so relieved to be alive again that I'd be cool for a while. It might actually take a while to set in, you know, and I feel
when you start hearing all the stories, it's like, wait, you did all of this before you rescued? This seems like, I mean, if they made a TV show about our lives, like a season's worth of stuff, what do you just let me sit there and drag in stomach acid while you tried out all these fancy ass recipes?
Well, you ate plants that eat people. Well, you put on frogs.
You ate a kelpie?
Also, like, are they taking a different route than they did the first time? Because otherwise, haven't they passed through all this the first time?
I've kind of been imagining that it's like like a dungeon crawler where the dungeon's going to be different every time you go down.
That would make sense, but I mean, they also have pretty well established, like, that Senshi knows the different layers pretty well, right? Because he, like, travels between certain ones all the time to get ingredients and whatnot.
Well, maybe it's like those games where it's not fully randomized. They build, like, rooms, but the rooms come in, like, different order. So, like, you never know what room's going to be next or, like, if this door is going to be open or that door. So maybe he's just been, like, around it enough that he kind of gets, like, all the permutations.
Oh, or Jan just pointed out that they're taking a shortcut because of the orcs map. So ever since the orc village, this has been like new to Laos and Marcial and Chilchuck. Like this is the same route that they took last time. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I was like, why wouldn't they just have frog suit, you know, or something?
And to answer some of the people in the comments who are wondering like how she's still alive, my understanding is she is quite dead.
Yeah.
But she's not she's not poop yet. And therefore they can resurrect her because her body is still mostly intact. But she's like, she's dead.
Yeah.
If it were Dragon Quest, to bring it back to here, she'd be like a coffin.
Yeah.
It's like getting dragged around behind the potty, the party. So she needs to, they need to do the raise spell, but she is no longer amongst the living.
Yeah. Someone else in the chat also pointed out that Fallon is also quite strange, which is fair. I guess her and Leos. Have we met their parents? Who made them? What was their childhood like? Because they are weirdos.
I'm imagining like freaking Marty McFly, like Crispin Glover from Back to the Future.
Yeah,
Like that has to be their dad. Like just a completely bizarre cartoon of a person.
Yeah.
Where they say, you know what, we're out of here. We're getting out of this place.
Like, peace. Yeah, we're out. Well, guys, I think that about wraps it up for this week. Next week we'll be back with more Solo Leveling and any major news that breaks to talk about it. Jackie will be back with us probably next month. She's got some project stuff she's working on. So if you've been wondering, where's Jackie? That's where she is. She'll be back. She's not gone forever. So thanks everybody for tuning in. And we'll be here next Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And I'll have more details for you guys about the trailer watch party. It's going to be exciting and different.
Change? No.
Change? Yeah. I mean, we're still going to show all the trailers. It's still going to air, you know, at a reasonable time, but myself, Richard Eisenbeis, and Gigak will be together at the Trash Taste Pod studio shooting it live there in Japan. So it'll be regular 5 p.m. for you guys. It'll be like 11 in the morning the following day for me. But keep your fingers crossed. We've got big fancy cameras and stuff, and I don't know what I'm doing, but they keep letting me do it. So, you know, we'll see you there. James, hope to have you at least in the comments so you can heckle us. Yeah. And as always, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.